You're listening to Ruining It for Everyone with your hosts Maggie McPhee and Christopher Harrington. Tonight's episode, Death Cab Confessional, with guests Mike J. Nichols, Jason Diamond, and Josh Diamond. This episode is sponsored by Red Giant Software, makers of kick-ass plugins for post-production. Check out their new short film, Tempo, at redgiantsoftware.com. This episode contains the additional topics we couldn't fit into last week's show. Enjoy!
Yeah, the whole idea of three films is a little bit ridiculous, but I think at the same time they do print money.
Oh yeah, they just made $1 billion. Of course they're going to make three movies. Yeah. They'd make seven movies out of it if they could figure it out.
Yeah, the only difference is this time Peter Jackson and the cast will actually get paid.
Right.
They won't have to sue New Line. Well, I mean, it happens with every movie. Every studio says they're, you know, oh, we didn't make nearly as much money as we thought we would. Sorry, back end, you know, money people. But each Lord of the Rings movie made in theatrically worldwide $1 billion. They cost $300 million in total.
Right. All three of them combined.
All three of them combined.
Yeah, not to mention merchandising.
$100 million of that was from the Weinsteins.
Well, we had to do $700 million worth of marketing, you know.
Yeah.
And so leaving out other Blu-rays and toys and all the other billions that come in, New Line claimed that they didn't make a profit.
Yeah. All that stuff we did that brought in more money didn't make more money for us.
That's why Peter Jackson wasn't going to make The Hobbit, because he was like, fuck you guys. You didn't pay me for the first one. Why would I make you more money? And then when the whole production fell apart with Guillermo del Toro, he's like, all right, fine, I'll do it. But I'm sure his contract just gores them over the barrel. You know what I mean? Because they can't. Right. He's the only one that will do it. No other filmmaker, if he wasn't involved, would touch it. Right? And there's class action lawsuits by actors and other people involved with the films, the first three films, to look at the accounting and be like, you guys are lying. Figure it out. Because it's like when a studio fudges on $100 million here or there, that's expected. But on billions of dollars that it's really kind of hard to hide. Like the New Line or the studio is Smog at this point. Right? Giant pile of money, and then are the actors and the rest of the people who should be paid for their work above and beyond whatever their contracts were, are storming the castle to take back their money from the dragon.
Well, this ties directly into our last episode where we talked precisely about this. We were talking about Rhythm and Hues and the Oscars and the VFX industry completely being in the shitter at the moment. And one of the ideas is that trying to get some of the back end, or he's trying to get or anything they can, really. But that's the thing. It seems to me that, you know, and again, this is from an outsider perspective, but it always seemed to me that, you know, these studios create these smaller companies just to make that one particular film. And magically, regardless of how much money they make, they never turn a profit.
Yeah, I mean, it's the magic of Hollywood. I mean, even Seth MacFarlane made a joke about it at the Oscars. He's like, this year has been a banner year for Hollywood, and like, Hollywood accountants have never had to work so hard to hide all the money they've made. You know what I mean? I mean, you know, that's if that's a joke to the general populace, you know, who are watching, then it's clear.
At the award show for the industry itself.
Exactly. Then it's clearly, you know, something that's not a fallacy.
Yeah, but that's just it. If they continue to say that, oh, well, you know, our books say that we're not making any money, and you have to litigate in order to get it, I mean, that's not solving the problem.
No. The whole visual effects thing, I'm not even going to get into the minutiae of it, but the studios and the companies, like I said, I'm not even going to get into reasonings or anything, but at a certain point, everyone's going to lose, right? Because you're going to lose the blockbuster movie, because Michael Bay cannot make his movies without visual effects, and neither can Peter Jackson or any of these giant filmmakers, Battleship and what have you. Now, you'll have giant companies like the ILMs and the Weta's and companies like that, Double Negative, maybe companies that won't get hit as hard because they're oh, I don't know about who backs Double Negative, but Weta obviously has other things, and ILM is owned by Disney now. But you're not going to have a whole genre of movies when the entire visual effects industry implodes.
Right. These billion-dollar films, I mean, it's Avatar, Titanic, Avengers, Harry Potter, Transformers, Lord of the Rings, Skyfall, Dark Knight, Pirates of the Caribbean, etc., you know? Yeah.
Avatar's getting made in China, so he'll be fine.
Yeah, but it made $2.7 billion already, yeah. So...
It's ridiculous for a horrible movie about blue cats having sex in space.
It just seemed
now
like
I'm interested.
It was furries. I never really saw it. I was like, wow, this is spectacular in the true sense of the word. It is a spectacle. Is it a good film? No, it's basically Pocahontas. It's that very typical, yeah. You know, only the white guy can save these savages, yeah, from their own destruction.
Yeah. Well, Game of Thrones is heading into that area right now with Jon Snow at the end of season 2. It's the same thing. Oh, people beyond the wall are savages. Oh, wait, they might be people too. And they have an agenda that I might agree with, but only days ago, before my mind was open to the prospect of there being actual human beings on the other side and not horrible monsters, could I have thought this to be true?
I read today the PlayStation 4 will do 4K video at 48 frames per second.
Yes, but it won't actually do video games.
No, right. Just video. But it'll be 100 gigs per movie, they said.
Right. Which, you know, I'm wondering, you know, they'll clearly have H.264 ASICs. So they'll have chips that automatically decode. That's not going to be a problem. But I'm wondering if they will have H.265. And if they've got H.265, then 100 gigs probably won't even matter.
H.265 isn't even going to be ready for another year.
But neither is the PS4.
No.
I know, but you know, the rumor is that there is not a canonical model of this machine yet.
Yeah, they don't. Right, exactly. It's currently, what is it? Three,
theoretical?
It's three NVIDIA, 690s, like ganged together in a gigantic PC.
Ah.
Yeah, good times. Yeah, they announced it, but if you notice, they didn't show the hardware because the hardware doesn't actually exist. And they said it was going to be due out in September sometime, but I don't see them spinning up a whole new case with all sorts of stuff, you know, within...
Oh, they designed that.
Well, I'm sure they designed the case, but, well, no, actually, they've said that they haven't designed the case. So I'm wondering how they're going to spin up something that is going to be as fast and as groovy as they say it is, but is currently taking up three very high-end NVIDIA cards in a giant PC chassis.
I thought they were working with NVIDIA on the...
Right.
Because I mean, I know they dropped the Cell processor,
yep,
from which is an insane, actually pretty ridiculous chip, but nobody can program for it, you know, effectively. And that NVIDIA has all their new virtualization, GPU on CPU virtualization. So I'm assuming that they're going to try and do some sort of, slightly on the fringe of my knowledge here, but I'm assuming they're going to do some sort of virtualization to maximize whatever the box needs to do as it's doing it on the fly to shift resources.
So it is going to be a more traditional PC-like box. It's going to be an AMD, and this is the really interesting bit, it's going to be an AMD CPU, I believe it's going to be, a 3-core AMD?
I totally heard it was going to be Intel.
No, it's going to be AMD. Because they're cheaper.
Tastes great. Less filling.
Less filling, exactly.
Slower.
Slower indeed. But more cores at lower power. So that's probably it. But they are going to be using NVIDIA GPUs. And it is going to be it's ostensibly going to be a PC in a box. So I'm quite interested. I believe I read John Carmack saying that there's going to be more RAM in the PlayStation 4.
I thought it was like 8 gigs or something.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's going to be quite a bit, yeah, which is smart.
Right. And the other thing is that the new Xbox that's coming out roughly at the same time-ish has very, very similar specs.
And will murder it.
I wonder.
Don't get me wrong. I have a PS3. I'm totally like a Sony person in that regard because I'm not like a traditional gamer. But and maybe they'll this will be their Pixar moment, but the Xbox team is never lost.
Except for when they chose HD DVDs.
Yeah. Well, but then nobody cared after a while.
Yes, well, I'm interested to see who Red can license their Red Ray codec and partner on ASICs, embedded ASICs with, because the Red Ray codec is ridiculous from an IP perspective. A 20 to 25 megabit 4K lossless stream is pretty crazy. And I've seen it. I mean, anyone who's been to NAB has seen it for the last couple of years. They've been showing it, and that's not even fully optimized. And it's you can't tell the difference.
And it's lossless at 25 megabit per second?
Basically. Visually.
Oh, so it's visually, it's optically lossless. Okay. Yeah. So it's like, it's ProResish.
Lossless enough.
Right.
I've seen like their high quality DCP projection alongside the Red Ray projection, both at 4K. And for all intents and purposes, you wouldn't know the difference if you didn't see them side by side.
Well, if Sony and Microsoft are smart, they won't go with specialized ASICs. They'll put FPGAs in there that can be, reprogrammed on the fly to do H.265 or Red.
But are FPGAs fast enough for that sort of stuff? I mean, traditionally they're pretty slow.
You need an ASIC for that.
Well, I mean, there are a lot of programmable ASICs and FPGAs out there that, do a lot of high-speed stuff, so.
Right. Well, also, I think, so we can actually talk a little bit about H.265 because the specs are kind of out there and we all seem to have read up on a little bit. One of the great things about the H.265 codec is that it is meant to, rather, it is parallel processing aware, which means that unlike H.264, which isn't, I mean, it is parallelizable on some level, but not to the extent that H.265 is going to be. And I think it's entirely possible that with the CPUs and the GPUs, they don't necessarily need an H.265 ASIC because the only thing they're going to be able to do in 4K is play video.
Right.
Yeah, well, and then in that case, yeah, I mean, something like that is basically not so much a buffer as a handoff device, I mean, to the GPUs. You can do this stuff now with your PC and a GPU, but right. But when you're like pipelining a lot of this stuff in a video game, you want it to be faster, and that's kind of what I was getting at. It's like you've got these monster GPUs, in this case, multiple GPUs, it sounds like, but there's so much you can do to make this thing a non-state machine, something that's just changeable on the fly.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, and that's the really nice thing about the Kepler and the CUDA stuff is that it's basically Turing complete. You can pretty much do anything you want on them these days. And obviously it's geared toward ridiculously parallel processing. And H.265 is perfect for that. Just write your codec to be streamable, and you should be good to go. Now, granted, saying that and actually doing that are two different things, but it seems to me that if that's the route they wanted to go, they would have the most amount of flexibility handing it off to a GPU like that versus having, a separate ASIC or what have you.
Well, NVIDIA announced like 6-7 months ago that they had, like I said earlier, they had successfully virtualized their GPU on CPU, and their goal is to, and they announced a console or a handset that they want
Project Shield, right?
Yeah, they want to parallel process everything in the cloud, which would be mainly CPU, right? And through their virtualization cores, and do all the rendering for the game in the cloud, and all you need is a decent, LTE connection or 4G connection. And so the handset is just getting frames. It's not doing the processing of the game. The game's being played in the cloud, and they're just pushing the frames down to you.
Which is actually something very similar to what they're doing. It's a natural consumer-level extension of what NVIDIA's been doing on the supercomputing end, where these people who are doing massive physics simulations, that's precisely what they're doing. They are offloading to a gigantic render farm, basically,
right,
and just their frame buffer, their local frame buffer, is just receiving the frames.
Right.
And, you know, it can be what is basically a dumb terminal.
That's kind of like, I don't know the specifics of it, but it's similar to the concept of Zinc on S3, the S3 backbone that a lot of visual effects houses like Atomic Fiction in San Francisco are using, where they're using all the render power of the cloud on the S3 backbone and getting done in an hour what used to take them a day on their highly maintained, highly expensive in-house farm. And then they spin it down when they don't need it and the movie's done and they don't have to pass on these maintenance and other internal costs on to the next gig.
Sure.
Yeah, there's going to be more and more and more and more of that. It's just right now the limitations are generally on how fast you can push the stuff up to them to right. get, you know.
And that's yeah. a limitation on so many of these types of ideas is getting the either the companies, I don't know where the bottleneck is, if it's the companies or the FCC or who's throttling, you know, the bandwidth, probably the companies from a infrastructure and cost.
Yeah, mostly cost. Well, and, you know, I mean, something like this. Well, actually, On Live, just the same thing we were just talking about. On Live did a lot of that, you know, that processing on their end and, you know, shooting the stuff back to the users, which is why they had that console that had basically nothing in it. I mean, we'll see this in a very short period of time where what you're just talking about will become maybe not the norm right away, but it'll be the norm soon enough.
We'll see. And we're also seeing this in sort of asynchronous versions as well, where there are services out there where if you've got a scene, you know, you just upload your scene to them, you know, all the scene data with all the animation data as well, and they will render it for you. And you say, okay, well, you know, I'm willing to pay for X number of CPUs, you yeah. know, or what have you. And then, you know, it's like a toaster. Like, ding, your file's done, and you just take it down. And, you know, it works on right. Cinema 4D files, on After Effects files, you know, all that stuff. You can just, you basically just offloading it. And, you know, no single Mac Pro is going to be as fast as, you know, uploading something like that, which can be done in moments.
Yeah, I get emails from one of those companies, Render something, RenderCore, I think it's called.
Yeah, I haven't checked any of them out personally, but I've got a few friends who have, and it works really well, and they've all basically said, yeah, there's no need for me to tie up my machine anymore when I can just upload scene data and get results back quick enough, and it's cheap enough apparently that
yeah.
you know, it's kind of a no-brainer.
Right, if you're not throwing up a lot of video along with it and stuff like that for what you're talking about, then that's totally doable now. These larger projects, I think, will, you know, begin to take advantage of that as well sooner than I think that a lot of people expect it.
Well, now if we could just get, you know, faster pipes to the internet, which unfortunately the telcos and the cable companies are certainly not wanting to do because that involves changing their infrastructure.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
I mean, I have Fios at home. I have at my house, I have 3535, you know, it's pretty fast up and down.
Wow.
Synchronous.
And how much are you paying per month for that?
If I may ask? I don't recall. It's a bundled thing
$4,000.
Yes, it's $4,000. Boy, can I upload? No, it's
quite reasonable. It's comparable.
It's not insane compared to, I get every channel they offer, which is most of them I don't watch. DVR, network DVR, so you can like, if I record something in the living room, the DVR in the bedroom will pick it up and let me play it. And a telephone that I don't use, but it's, you know, a landline that just happens to be part of the bundle to keep the price down. But it's not obscene.
Cool.
And I think, you know, at our office, we have 300 over 150 from Fios. And it's, again, it's not obscene compared to what it would have been, you know, 5 years ago.
Oh, sure. Well, that would have been impossible yeah. a few years ago for mere mortal money.
Yeah.
It doesn't hurt that Verizon owns a lot of backbone.
Well, yeah. right. And that's kind of it, too. It's like, you know, keeping it in the network is going to be obviously way cheaper for them Mm-hmm. And you also happen to be lucky that you happen to be in an area where fires is often.
Yes, very much.
Yeah, you bastard.
And that brings me to the other point where the shorter form, the adverts and short films and all that, they now have access to visual effects and a post-production workflow that was unthinkable 5-10 years ago.
Right.
And so the possibilities to tell a story creatively in a 30-second spot, in a 5-minute video, even if it's only destined for YouTube or somewhere on the internet versus on television, there's still stuff going on that's really, I mean, again, you know, 5 years ago would have been impossible.
Well, where MTV created the music video, YouTube has resurrected the music video, because some band can spend 10 or 15 grand on a music video and get a million more sets of eyes to watch it on YouTube than they ever could on the 4 spins a day that people would randomly catch on television. Right. You know, it's a much more effective medium online than it has ever been on television.
Yeah, that's fascinating to me because, yeah, when we grew up, MTV was everything.
Right. If you've got your video, I mean, we did a lot of videos in the 90s.
Back in the day, MTV played videos.
Right, when they played videos, and a lot of our videos got played on MTV. But it would be like, I'm going to stay up just to watch 120 minutes or Headbangers Ball just to see my video once.
Right.
Whereas now I can post it on Facebook, I can put it on Twitter, I can send it to somebody in an email and say, hey, check out my work so that I can get new work or whatever. And oh, yeah, by the way, you know, my video got 13 million views in 2 weeks. Oh, well, clearly you're doing something right. I want you to be on my team, you know. It's a much more effective way to show not only what you do, but sometimes great results.
It's a really great calling card.
Yeah.
Exactly. I'm interested to hear, and you guys would be really great to answer this, is now that YouTube is decidedly, you know, it's an internet destination, countless millions of people are on it every day, just like they're on Facebook every day, and they're watching videos, and it's part of a community. It's a true community. Do you think that producing and releasing a video on YouTube, and maybe it gets a million hits or what have you, do you think that has the same or similar cachet than, say, having it broadcast on television?
From a broadcast standpoint, I think it's much more powerful to have a piece go online on YouTube and hit 100 million views than to go on MTV, let's say, if we're talking about music videos, and play, even if it played 5 times a day for 6 months, you're going to have infinitely less people see your work in that scenario than you would in the 100 million views on YouTube. Like, look at Psy, that North Korean dude, or South Korean dude, whatever. Yeah. He got a billion views. And that billion views made him about 850 grand in revenue from Google, but it made him $10 million last year in sponsorship. Right?
Crazy.
From God knows what else.
The perfect dovetail to that is that, I think it was like a month ago, YouTube announced that they revoked close to a collective billion views from all the major record labels who had been, however they manufactured it technologically, all the major record labels had been manufacturing views on their artists' videos.
Yeah, they were basically rigging the vote, as it were, where they would Mechanical Turk it. They hired jillions of people in India and China to just watch the video all the time over and over again.
If a record label is doing that, then clearly that is signaling that there is a value to the medium, because otherwise they wouldn't bother to rig it.
Sure, right. Sure.
Well, it's like in the 80s and 90s when they wanted to break a band, they would release the record, and then week one they would pre-buy as the, quote, consumer, a million units so that their record would go platinum.
It would debut at number one.
Exactly. It went platinum. Oh my God, have you ever heard of this person? No, wow, it's so great. It went platinum, but except it doesn't really go platinum. They're just buying in on the back end.
Right.
See, you know?
And outside of the music sense, though, something like House of Cards.
Right.
is going to be this piece of entertainment that is, you know, changing the way, I guess, we are getting a television program. One, all episodes at the same time, and two, it's not on TV. But it cannot be, correct me if I'm wrong, it cannot be nominated for an Emmy or any of those traditional awards because it is not a television broadcast show.
Right. Well, they're just like the Nielsens are starting to look into adding streaming content and tablet content. I'm sure all other awards shows and whatnot are going to have to start taking that into account.
Yeah, the Emmys will be the first one to jump because they were quick to jump when, you know, for cable series and stuff.
Right,
so,
right.
Yeah.
It's still going to be a while, though.
The House of Cards thing to me makes sense because you have a whole market of people who don't have HBO or don't have a specific channel, be it just regional issue or a financial issue or whatever, what have you, that are want to watch a whole episode, you know, series at once. Like I just, like I said earlier, I just watched Game of Thrones seasons 1 and 2, you know, in 5 days-ish.
Wow. That's a lot of Thrones.
Yes, it's a lot of Thrones. A lot of Games of Thrones.
Watching on the throne.
I just did a massive Archer marathon on Netflix as well. So, scary. So,
but,
sorry.
You know, so, but the point is that there's clearly a populace that wants to watch, you know, doesn't want to wait the week and they want to string through it, but advertising prohibits you from doing that in the typical model. But then you have somebody like Mark Cuban, who he doesn't do this anymore, but he was trying to because he owns the Landmark Theater chain. He owns Magnolia Films, you know, distribution, and he owns HDNet, where he would do the same day and date releasing of, and I think the first one he did was Bubble, that Soderbergh movie. You could see it in the theater and you could leave the theater with the Blu-ray or DVD if you want. And you could go home and watch it again on HDNet when you got home. And you know, video on demand. And or you could walk out of the theater and say, shit, my buddy Bob would love this movie, but he just had triplets and there's no way he's going to go to the movies for 5 years.
Why is he Southern?
So I'm going to, exactly.
Because his name is Bob.
And I'm going to buy this movie for him on the way out and give it to him or suggest the film to him today. And instead of him having to remember to rent the DVD or, you know, stream it or what have you, it's 7 months from now when it comes out, we're going to get that revenue now while it's in the public.
Right. And spend our promotional money at once to push it all.
I don't understand why nobody does that.
Well, I wonder with, especially for something like House of Cards, where it's, you know, it's a new series. Netflix is trying to be HBO before HBO can be Netflix, and I get that. And I wholly support them in that because I think both of them have some really great ideas and I want them to fight it out because that just means better things for me. And ultimately, I'm selfish in my consumption of media. What I found interesting, though, was that there's all this hype of, you know, it being on Netflix and it being available, you know, all the episodes are available. It seems to me that the hype will die out versus, you know, stringing it along every week or every other day or some sort of time stretching where, you know, where's the water cooler conversation?
That's it. That's what I was just going to say. There's no more water cooler. I can't say, hey, did you watch last night's episode? What do you think's going to happen? We are missing that way.
Right. And that was the big thing. You know, when Game of Thrones was airing, everyone in the office would watch it. And the following day, we would talk about it. You know, and those who didn't talk about it felt left out and we shamed them. And, you know, they'd eventually catch up. And it was a shared experience. And with all this personalization, we're losing that shared experience.
Well, now everyone's just posting on their Facebook. I just watched all of House of Cards. It was great. And like you're saying, there is no like, can you believe Ronnie left Bobby in the middle of episode 7 or whatever happens in Game of Thrones.
Well, Bob had triplets, so.
Sorry, that was Game of Thrones, G-A-Y-M-E.
Slightly different.
Yeah.
And I can't talk to you about it because now you've seen the whole series, so I have to watch the entire series in order for us to have a conversation.
Well, you could say, hey, remember what happened in episode 3? That's where I'm at. We could still talk about it. I mean, I do that with Breaking Bad, with my brothers watched everything, and I was like in the middle of season two, and he'd be like, oh, just wait till season four. You can't even blah, 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 you know, but we can still have a discussion about it.
But it's not the same thing because you're both not, because you're not at the same place, you're not experiencing it the same way.
But I think that that's been different for a while due to now VOD and streaming and DVR and whatnot. I might DVR 8 episodes of a show just because I just don't have time to watch it. And I might watch all 8 episodes on some random Saturday night. I think we're sort of halfway in between.
Yeah, yeah. I think that happens, but I think for the breakout shows like Lost, for example, or Game of Thrones, those are just the two that pop into my head. There's such a following that everyone, it was an event. Right, you stop, or even like Walking Dead in the first season, and I've kind of tapered off from it. But I knew people who, you know, they've got DVRs, but they would watch live because it was a cultural event. You know, people.
Yeah, but I would much rather have been able to peel through the entire series of Lost to get to the disappointing ending as quickly as possible.
Actually, what I did, I didn't start watching Lost into the last season, and all my friends were watching it, so I plowed through the entire thing in a couple of weeks.
You were pumped, and you were pumped. You were like, man, this is great. Ready. And then season five, you were like, what the fuck is going on?
I wanted to do that with Walking Dead so I could get through the shitty first season.
Get to the great half of the third season.
Better second season, and I haven't even had any interest or bothered to watch the third season, which I'll catch up to at some point.
The first half of the second season was awful. I don't need to see 8 episodes of where's the girl? I can't find the girl, and all this fucking talking.
It's not called The Talking
all their
Dead.
Money had been taken away, and they yanked Darabont out of there. So.
Not called The Talking Dead. It's called The Walking Dead.
Yeah, The Talking Dead is the podcast afterwards.
Yes.
Which apparently is
equally as boring.
Really?
I haven't seen it. I'm just joking.
Because I know quite a few people who are really into it. But I haven't checked it out. So
I was going to add one thing about that, the visual effects side of it, and the whole idea that, you know, like the Diamond Brothers now have this feature film, and you guys can, you know, do your own effects. But then when the deadline happens, you know, there's no way you can do all this stuff. So you're always going to have to hire a group of people
I think, but Maggie's point was just that having been in that position on our own, that we understand what we're about to put these people through, so we're more kind about it rather than being like, fuck those guys, you know.
I was still going to go on to say that the fear that those people aren't going to be employable anymore because there's no businesses. Right. I said, that's really scary. So here you guys are getting this really great big movie. You're like, we're fucked. There's no one to hire.
Yeah. Well, there will always be. We've talked about them as Bedouins, and you know they move around. But
you'll always get stringers. Okay,
here's the thing I didn't say in the last show. A lot of the people that we need now, we will not need very soon, and the cost will necessarily go down. A lot of people will be automated out of jobs very soon. The true artistry can never be done, but you know when you've got 50 roto people. That's a lot of roto people, and a lot of that will eventually be, you know, more automated, and that cost will go down. So by the time these guys get their feature film next year, you know, hopefully that'll be the case.
Luckily, there's no roto in our movie.
Right now.
See there, you've already saved money.
Well, I better stop writing that script, Roto the movie.
Yes.
It's Roto the Slayer.
Yes.
I think that's Red Giant's next short film.
Oh, yeah.
Right. Bob the Giant Roto Slayer.
God damn it, Seth.
That's my new app I'm going to write.
Nice.
Oh, that is what Maggie was just talking about. That automates Roto. It's going to be called Roto Slayer.
That would be brilliant.
Giant Roto Slayer.
But it basically comes with all the Slayer records and you can't turn them off.
Ever. It's like some horrible Metalocalypse episode where everyone just bleeds to death out of their eyeballs and ears. It's fantastic.
But at least at the end, your shot's done.
Blood drips out of the mask.
Oh. Brilliant. I would totally pay to see that.
That was another episode of Ruining It for Everyone with your hosts Maggie McPhee and Christopher Harrington. Music provided by Kevin MacLeod. You can find us at ruiningitforeveryone.tv or search for Ruining It for Everyone on iTunes. Be sure to subscribe and rate the show, as it really helps us out.
You can find Mike on Twitter as The Edit Doctor, or on the web as theeditdoctor.tumblr.com. You can find the Diamond Brothers at thediamondbros.com. On Twitter, Josh is Josh_Diamond. Jason is Jason Diamond. Okay, let's see. My monitor just went black, which means that I haven't
turned on the dispersal. We've been fucking around for 10 minutes.
Yes, we have. That's okay. This will probably go into the after show.
I'm just saying that the black screen means 10 minutes you've been fucking around.
Oh, no. Actually, I have mine really aggressive. I have it set for like 5 minutes of inactivity. So.
Just to remind you, like, hey, dude, you're not doing anything.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. That, and consequently, my panels are really, really old, so they still have a good amount of brightness to them.
Right.
So I've got the...
Because you fuck around a lot and they go black.
Yeah, you know. We'll have them on, you know, all the time, and then they'll just go to sleep. So if I, you know, walk out the door or something like that, you know, it's pretty decent. Because the last thing I want to do is change the cold compact fluorescent bulbs and these things. It's the, you know, they're the matte displays and all that, so I don't have any glare and all that.
Yeah.
And the 30-inch monitor is actually Maggie's, which I brought back from Cambridge via Amtrak.
On the train.
Yeah. that was Mr. Toad's wild ride, I'll tell you that much. It was a bit of a harrowing experience, considering that the cab driver was talking to me the entire way about all of her physical ailments.
Somebody else just told me something similar. We were in Park City, and a friend was meeting us up in some fancy house we were drinking at in the hills. He said that the lady talked to him about her problems the whole way, and then offered him a handful of pills.
Good times.
Yeah. She's like, here, I don't need all these. You look like you could use some. Here, take these. And explained to him what all of them were, and he was like, okay.
Which implies that she had been taking them on or prior to the journey.
Oh, yeah.
That sounds like Park City.
Yeah. Oh, dear. Yeah. Yeah, and this is why I use a seatbelt in cabs.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because, holy fuck. Of course, there was the other time where I was going home from, I think I was coming back from San Francisco, and, you know, at JFK... I get a cab because my normal ride, I have a driver that'll pick me up and take me all the way back to Greenwich. And that got screwed up. So I wound up taking a cab into Manhattan, and the guy was falling asleep. I don't know if it's because he was drugged up or just overtired, like on way too long a shift or something, but he would fall asleep at the stoplights or would veer off, you know, while we were driving.
Whoa.
And yeah. Like, I was tweeting as if my life depended on it. It was really quite scary. And after a time, I was like, okay, this is a safe spot. I know where I am. And wound up walking, you know, 30-odd blocks. Once I got into Manhattan proper, I was like, I can take it from here.
Yeah, don't worry about it.
Yeah.
If it had been a movie, the cab would have gone another block and exploded.
More than likely.
Yeah. I have a better one than that. I was coming home from being out with my wife, and we get into the cab. And the guy looks at me and he goes, do you play guitar? I said, sure. And he goes, here. And he hands me an acoustic guitar from the front seat and says, play us home.
Right on.
So I'm playing. I'm in the back seat. I'm in the back seat playing. And he goes, we're driving, mind you, like down the FDR. And he goes, hold on a second. I got to play a song. And my wife hands him the acoustic guitar out her passenger window. He grabs it out the driver's window and proceeds to drive with his knees while playing us his favorite Neil Young song.
Is it Sugar Mountain by chance?
I don't remember, but I made a movie of it on my iPhone. I'll send it to you.
That is
brilliant. I had nothing. I was going to tell about, you know, my cat, the cab driver I get ridden with a couple of times who smells like weed, but God, nothing like that.
Please hand me that piano.
Yeah.
Yeah, really. I feel more safe with Mr. Weed Driver now.
Yeah, well, you know, in a worst case scenario, he's just going to get you there really, really slowly.
My kid came up with a new
movie genre this morning. Zombie ghosts from outer space.
I'll buy a ticket. I'm throwing my money at the screen.
We must make this now.
Yes. Yeah. It's Event Horizon and Sunshine.
Event Horizon.
Yeah.
I don't know. Sunshine, but I'll give you Event Horizon.
Yeah.
That's Hellraiser in space. I love a good Sam Neill, weird, you know, like, I, you know, Lawrence Fishburne.
Larry Fishburne, yeah.
No, Lawrence Fishburne.
I'm sorry, yeah.
Lawrence.
Yeah, I liked it. I thought it was, you know, I was not expecting Hamlet in space, you know.
No, usually that's not going to happen with a guy with pins in his head.
No one expects Hamlet in space.
I just want to point out that you created a new genre of film right there, the Sam Neill weird movie selections.
Yes. Right. Hey, Night the Screaming Stopped.
Yeah.
Phenomenal film.
Yeah.
In the Mouth of Madness, wasn't he in that too?
Yeah,
he's in that.
Carpenter. Yeah.
John Carpenter, you know, he's the third Omen movie. He's got a genre for sure, Sam Neill.
I'm going to have John Carpenter call your daughter tomorrow.
Can you have Carpenter call me?
Yeah.
Screw his daughter. She's four. She can barely talk.
Yeah.
Well, clearly she has better ideas than any of us.
Mostly John Carpenter just apologizes for all those movies that we like. I could have done better. That's what he does now.
He wants everyone to remake his movies.
He does want them to do that?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he's all for it.
He was like petitioning for a while, and like those really extreme Japanese guys, directors, to remake certain movies of his.
Big Trouble in Little China.
Oh, that would be amazing. But the prequel to The Thing was awful.
I'm going to give that one a Lawrence Fishburne. I kind of like it. No way.
I love Mary Lawrence Fishburne.
I love Mary Elizabeth Winstead, but that was not watchable.
It wasn't a good movie.
And Joel Edgerton was in too, and I love him too, and still did not want to watch it.
Well, so here's what happened. I went to see it at the theater because I'm a huge John Carpenter fan. So I went to see it.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite movies.
Yeah. So I went to see it, and I was like, that was really just not good. It was just, you know. So then I went home, blah, blah, blah. The Blu-ray came out. Got the Blu-ray, watched it, watched The Thing. Oh, it was good together. It was like a sandwich.
No, you can't have a movie that's supposed to be a prequel and then try and ape all the gags from the movie that it's supposed to have come before.
I think I described it. It was a love letter to the original movie. It was just basically.
Well, it should not be a love letter.
Yeah, well, it really failed at being a prequel. I'll give it that. It was the same movie.
There was no good beard. Like Kurt Russell, like MacReady beard.
And that is always a problem.
Yes.
Yeah. I like how our high frame rate discussion has devolved into shitting on
beard
on Carpenter remakes.
And there's nothing wrong with that.
High frame rate, Christine.
Yes, both Escape movies. Please remake them now. I'll throw my money at you.
But no one will ever be a better Plissken than Kurt Russell.
No. But someone could make a good movie.
He could still do it.
He could.
Nah.
Oh, well, he could totally do it.
I don't know.
He'd be brilliant.
I thought that for a while, but I saw him recently, and he's finally starting to really show his age after 900 years.
Well, they can CG de-age him. Like Tron Legacy.
Yeah. Oh, that was awful.
Yes, it was.
The only way I'll take an older Snake Plissken is if he makes a molting joke. Otherwise, I'm out, and it better be in the trailer.
I could see that.
Wouldn't it be molt from New York?
No.
Who said that?
Jason said that.
No, oh no. I take no credit for that.
Dangerous, highly dangerous.
So what we're looking for is Big Trouble in Little China at 60 frames per second. Shot in China. Okay.
But imagine Big Trouble in Little China, but with better, like, CG.
No, you cannot touch that, the effects in that movie. The low pan, giant floating low pan is perfect.
Oh, yeah.